Chuck Hurley is in the studio with me this afternoon. He is the national CEO of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, a group that really needs to change his name because biologically, Chuck, you're not a mom.
I'm not a mom. The women hire me to do their work, and if I behave, they let me to continue.
Hey, that's how it works in my house. Same thing. Matt is having their national conference here in St. Louis, just a block away from us at the Renaissance Hotel. I appreciate you coming in the rain to sit in the studio with me this afternoon. We've got about, what, 500 of you here in town
today? We do, from all 50 states. These are our volunteer leaders and staff leaders from all around the country. Getting focused on our work for next year.
Okay, where are we on drunk driving legislation? As I mentioned to you off the air before we went on, we at KMOX like to think that we've been instrumental in pressuring the people in Jefferson City and our state legislature on toughening the laws on drunk driving. How are we doing in Missouri and Illinois and the other 48 states?
Well, we've made great progress as a country on drunk driving, about a 44% decline since 1980 when MAD was founded. But if we're honest with ourselves, and we try to be, much of that progress plateaued about 10 years ago. The people who are going to respond to license revocation and stepped up enforcement have already responded. And this is not the fault of law enforcement. We, like yourselves, are strong supporters of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were honored to give KMOX a National Media Award 2 years ago for your continuing coverage on these issues. We think we have a four-point program to eliminate drunk driving beginning in 10 years. I hope there's some skepticism that we can do that.
You just said the word eliminate.
We mean it. Even my own staff, when we came up with this, said, well, Chuck, you really don't mean eliminate. Actually, we do.
Hmm.
And I'd like if I could to spell it out. But let me first answer your question. Illinois and Missouri have more work to do on drunk driving. They have joined the nation in a great deal of that progress. One area that Illinois is doing far better than Missouri on is belt use. They enacted a primary seatbelt law in 2003. Then an obscure state senator named Barack Obama, along with Senator John Cullerton, enacted that law. And they have had the lowest number of traffic fatalities in Illinois since 1924. Not lowest rate, lowest actual number. With a fairly mediocre drunk driving record. So that really shows what you can do with belt use. We hope Missouri will follow.
Mm-hmm.
Another area that Illinois has led on is the area of interlock legislation. They just enacted a law 2 weeks ago. Governor Blagojevich signed it, that if you drive drunk in Illinois on first offense, you will get a box in your car that requires you to blow into it and in order to start the car.
Mm-hmm.
That law takes effect a year from January and is going to be administered through their Secretary of State's office. That is the single best proven way of getting drunks off the road and keeping them off the road.
Mm-hmm.
The main reason why people drive drunk in Missouri 27 years after everybody knows what it does is because they can.
Mm-hmm.
We have great law enforcement in Missouri. As you know, MAD has done its Band with Blue program to support law enforcement. And yet, even with the best efforts, the science indicates that people drive drunk 87 times before they're caught the first time.
87 times?
Yes. So first offense really is a euphemism for first time caught.
Right.
Again, not the fault of law enforcement. We need to support everything they do. But we have a four-point program that I'd like to lay out for you. That eventually would lead to the elimination of drunk driving, and we hope again that there's some initial skepticism, which we hope to dispel. The first initiative is we support the cops. First, these folks have to be arrested, and we not only support their efforts on checkpoints, on roving patrols, and the range of activities they do, we support their budgets. Law enforcement really were the best friends MAD had in its first 27 years, and we intend to be their best friends going forward. I think everybody knows we support the cops. I don't know the need to go further on that. We really support law enforcement. We consider them to be the everyday heroes. The second initiative is we believe that 27 years after we know what it does, anybody who continues to drive drunk over the generous limit of 0.08 blood alcohol concentration has earned the right to an interlock. That would be Mel Gibson, Paris Hilton, Peter Coors, all of the people recently arrested, both in Hollywood across the country. The main reason why they continue to drive drunk is because they can. And they, even though their license is revoked, we know that up to 75% of drunk drivers continue to drive, even on a revoked license, because they can. Interlocks stop that. The technology has been around for more than 30 years, has been proven in 17 peer-reviewed studies to be 40 to 90% effective in reducing recidivism. A lot of that research was done in Canada with the support of Anheuser-Busch at the Traffic Injury Research Foundation. Five provinces in Canada have had great success. New Mexico was the first state in the United States to have a first offense interlock law. And as we as a country have stood still for the last 10 years, and the last 3 years, New Mexico has had a 28% reduction in alcohol-related fatal crashes. Last year experienced a further 11% reduction in fatalities, and year-to-date is experiencing yet another reduction. We were very impressed with that, held an international technology conference there a year ago. And out of that, we have become very strong supporters of first offense interlock legislation. Arizona enacted this year with the support of Governor Napolitano. Illinois, as I indicated, Senator John Cullerton again, along with Governor Blagojevich, just signed the bill 10 days ago. And also the state of Louisiana. Now four states that have first offense interlocks at 0.08. We are very much focused at our meeting here in St. Louis on the other 46.
Mm-hmm.
We are very hopeful that that will happen, and that will send a clear message: drive drunk, get a box. Box stays on until you prove you've learned your lesson. And the good news for taxpayers is the offender pays for that. It's about the $3 a day, about the cost of a drink a day. And a lot of people believe this is the single best way to deal with drunk driving as it currently stands. They get to keep their license. They get to keep their job and family. They just don't get to keep their blood alcohol concentration. The third initiative is also exciting. Car companies all over the world are working on advanced technology that holds the real promise in about 10 years that new cars will be sold in America that aren't operable by drunk drivers. As most of your listeners know, cars can park themselves these days. The Lexus can, and the Infiniti has lane departure warning in the seat. There are about four or five advanced technologies that will be able to accurately detect whether someone is above the legal limit. For people that haven't been convicted of anything, they shouldn't have to blow anything. They shouldn't probably have to pay for anything. It has to be Six Sigma reliable and all of that. But car companies all over the world are working on advanced technologies. You may have seen the Nissan concept car released in Tokyo about 3 weeks ago that has four or five of these technologies on it. Some of it is transdermal. The vapor through the skin can be measured on the gear shift lever or any other surface, the steering wheel. Some of it is near infrared that can be measured into the soft tissue, measuring through tissue spectroscopy, words I've only recently been able to use in a sentence.
First time I've ever heard the word.
Measures the interstitial tissue blood alcohol concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you real-time information. And again, we think it should be set not at zero, as it should be for convicted drunk drivers, but at the illegal limit of 0.08. It's going to take about 10 years. We think in about 5 years, many of these devices will be available for clinical trial. We think fleets would be very interested, corporate fleets, government fleets, sadly, school bus fleets. Volvo has an Alco key it's working on in Sweden, and next year we'll introduce the United States an Alco lock technology with these interlocks put in as factory equipment. There is exciting development around the world. The fourth initiative is most important to MAD. This future will only happen if there's public support, if the public wants it. So we are delighted to have this opportunity at KOMOX to explain what we're doing. We have had great success. If MAD explains what it's doing to the public in a very transparent way, answers any of the normal questions that would arise, the public support to get drunk drivers off the road is overwhelming. And if we present the science and our homework in a very respectful way, we've had great success. We literally believe that beginning in 10 years, we can make a vaccine for drunk driving, not on the drunk, on the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And that this will lead to a situation where we can make drunk driving the public health equivalent of polio. Not overnight. Even in 10 years, it will take another 15 years to go through the fleet, even if we get new cars equipped. But we believe that's, at MAD, we consider this an intoxicating idea.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Chuck Hurley, who's the national CEO of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and laying out a four-point plan for what he says could be the elimination of drunk driving in 10 years. Let me go over a couple of things, sure, that you've talked about here. One, I'm really glad to hear that you guys have jumped onto my bandwagon, because I have been pushing the breathalyzer in cars thing for years. Now, I will tell you, people accuse me of bias on this because I don't drink. October 11th will be 14 years since I've had a drop of alcohol.
Congratulations.
So they say to me, well, of course you want this. It's never going to affect you. But I also know that when I did drink, I was irresponsible at times, and I would get in the car. And even though I'm a big person, I was never a falling down, sloppy, driving all over the car, over the highway drunk. But I know that I was buzzed and behind the wheel when I shouldn't have been. That wasn't the reason I stopped, but I know that, especially in my college and later years, that was a factor. And now that I have the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, I can look back and say there should have been something done about me if anyone had ever caught me. As you point out, a lot of people drive drunk every day who will never be caught until something bad happens, and that's when the tragedies occur. We need to do something to step in before that. And one way to do that is to stop the recidivism of somebody who is stopped. And I have been saying for years, you can't just take away their license, because people will continue to drive without a license. It's the car that's the problem. It's not the license. It's not illegal to operate a license while you're drunk. It's illegal to operate a car. And it's not dangerous to operate your license when you're drunk. It's dangerous to drive when you're drunk. So I have said for years, the only way you can do it is to take away the car, which is going to be an incredible burden on people in families. One person gets charged with that for the first time. It's the only car the family has. You can't take it away, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Plus, what do you do if they're driving on a company car? You're not going to do that. So that's not practical. The way to do it is to make sure that when they drive, they're not going to drive when they're drunk. And these breathalyzers, and I've spoken to a guy from a company called Smart Start, which has representatives in the Midwest based right here in St. Louis. They are one of the leaders in this technology, interlock ignition technology. And he says that there actually are more and more judges that are telling repeat offenders that they have to get one of these. And I think the word repeat needs to be taken out of there. And I've said this for years, Chuck. Offenders need to be charged with this. I don't know how long they have to do it for. Is it 90 days? Is it 6 months? Is it a year? I don't know what the right amount of time is, but I think it is kind of a shock to the system of that drunk driver to realize that whenever they get in their car, they now have to be aware of this.
Well, first off, we should have spoken to you sooner, because you're absolutely right that the device does separate the drunk driver from the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
It's well proven. Again, research supported by Anheuser-Busch really proves that. It varies by state how long this is applied. For first offenders at 0.08, no other aggravating offense, didn't hit anybody or another car. 90 to 180 days, we think, would be a sensible requirement. But that if they try to drive drunk during that period or tamper with the device, the clock should reset.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it shouldn't be a set period of time, but 90 to 100 days of compliance,
mm-hmm,
not just a set period of time.
Absolutely.
For if there, you know, any higher blood alcohol concentration, or certainly where somebody has been hit and injured, those penalties should be much more severe. But it does seem to hit a political sweet spot, in that it allows people to keep their job, keep their family, just doesn't allow to keep their bad habit.
It also allows juries and courts to convict, because in many cases, the 12 people sitting in that jury box look at that person who's on trial and say, well, that could be me, and I wouldn't want to go to jail if this were me and I were just pulled over for drunk driving, and so I'm not going to convict. And I truly believe that that affects the process.
Well, and jails are full. We believe jail is the appropriate place for someone who has hit and injured somebody, certainly someone who's killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But for an offense of drunk driving, which is a serious offense, we believe first offense, the best way to handle that is not jail, but interlock devices. And Representative St. Ange here in suburban St. Louis introduced it last year. We're very hopeful that he will consider introducing the bill next year. Illinois could be in the forefront of that issue, by passing a first offense interlock bill. We certainly would invite the support of Anheuser-Busch and others toward that end.
I hope that they do move in that direction. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. I'm Paul Harris, sitting in the studio with Chuck Hurley, who's the national CEO of MAD. And we're talking about things that can still be done in the fight against drunk drivers. As Chuck pointed out, the fight has kind of plateaued in the last decade or so. Maybe getting breathalyzers in the cars of everyone who's pulled over and convicted of a DUI would be the next way to go. I think it's a great idea. It's something I've been endorsing for quite a while. Let's go to the phones here because Sandy has a question for you. Sandy, you're on KMOX. Hi.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
I agree with you and your guests on everything you're saying, but what I would like to see is breathalyzers at the bars. For instance, like whenever I go out, I would like to know how I am before I leave. If I can have the opportunity to blow, maybe I would stick around and drink Cokes for a while instead of getting in my car.
Chuck?
I just wonder what you and your guests think about that.
Well, it is a good idea. We at MAD wait until there's peer-reviewed science before we'd support it. Unfortunately, one of the problems, I bartended my way through school some years ago in Pennsylvania, but one of the things that has happened with breathalyzers in bars is it becomes a contest that my fellow guys, kind of stupid guy behavior stuff is to see how high you can get the machine to go. But we
By the way, I'm now picturing that on a, you know, it doesn't even have to be a Friday night. It could be a Thursday night like tonight. Guys going out and saying, you got 2-2 last time. I'm going to get 2-3 tonight, dude.
We should look into this, though, because I think 0.08 is a generous amount of alcohol. People there have been various opinions on that. For a person your size or mine, we're both, you know, fairly large guys, that's 4 or 5 drinks in the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
No one has any business behind the wheel. The alcohol industry has said, well, it could be a 125-pound woman with one drink. Well, that's possible if the drink's about 16 ounces. It's a lot of alcohol.
But here's the other part of this, Sandy. How are you going to enforce that? When that person's in that bar and they're on their way out, you're going to have the bar hire somebody who's at the door who tells every person, every patron on their way out, hey, before you leave, you got to blow in this. And then you do blow over that, what do they do?
I agree. You are stuck between a rock and a hard spot, but I would love to just have that option available to the more mature, responsible.
Well, let me ask Chuck this then.
It's a good point.
Could Sandy buy a personal breathalyzer she carries in her purse?
There are some available on the market. I'll be honest with you, I don't know how accurate they are. You see them in all the airline magazines. And I think 0.08 is a generous amount of alcohol. We, of course, at MAD, the best practice rule is don't drink and drive. Now,
mm-hmm.
we don't think it should be criminalized to 0.08. But as a general rule, whenever possible, have someone else drive if you have any alcohol at all.
Sandy, here's a good rule. If you're ever in a bar and you hear yourself saying to somebody else, hey, look what I can do, you're drunk. Thanks for calling. 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120. How many drunk drivers are there on the road, let's say like right now, 2:44 in the afternoon on a Thursday? Got any idea?
Well, we have data from Ohio, which I think bears on this. We don't have Missouri data. In Ohio, people are sharing the roads with 33,000 people with 5 or more offenses, 147,000 people with 3 or more offenses. This is from the Columbus Dispatch.
Now, when you say offenses, you mean people who've been convicted of drunk driving?
Yes, convicted of drunk driving. And this is from the Columbus Dispatch. Those numbers are comparable across the United States. Many people are never sober. They stay drunk through the day and from last night. So it's very possible one of the crashes you just reported was caused by a drunk driver, and that will ruin the afternoon for everybody in St. Louis.
And again, this is that recidivism we're talking about. Are there people out there who've been busted and still driving 10, 20, 30 times?
Well, our lead volunteer from South Dakota here in St. Louis today lives down the road from what may or may not be the national record, a guy arrested for the 33rd time. 6 months ago in Albuquerque, a guy arrested for the 28th time.
These are people who are not getting the message they shouldn't be doing this.
Well, many of them are deeply addicted, and they need help and treatment. We support that. But first, the public needs to be protected. These folks need an interlock. Anytime a crash occurs with someone previously convicted, the question the public needs to ask, Why didn't that guy have an interlock?
And also, you know, while we're pushing for this, as I said on this show and through Megan Lynch's reporting on KMOX, we've tried to get the legislatures to pass tougher laws regarding particularly repeat offenders. But I also think we need to be tougher on people who drink, drive, and kill. It can't just be you're doing 90 days of weekends for a few months while you continue on with the rest of your regular life. It needs to be. And I'm not just talking about a guy who has a couple of beers or has a six-pack of beers at a ball game and then drives and doesn't hurt anybody. I'm talking about, for instance, the guy who crushed Officer Mount Browning's legs, or Leonard Little, who killed Susan Gutweiler right around the corner from us here in downtown St. Louis, or others who are not only a hazard but have proven themselves harmful to other human beings. They need to see jail time.
For serious offenses, they need to see serious jail time. In my lifetime, I'm 62, more than a million people in the United States have been killed by drunk drivers. Mm. And in my lifetime, if we follow these 4 points of MAD, all available at our website if people want more information at MAD.org, we honestly believe we can eliminate one of the primary threats to the American family.
Let me go back to the phones. Charlie, you're on KMOX. Hi. Charlie, hello.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I had experience about 20 years ago helping a friend work on his carport down in South County, and I got hammered. At that time, I lived in St. Charles County. I drove home. I went into the bathroom. I relieved myself and sat on a stool and cried because I didn't know what I had done.
Mm-hmm.
From that time on, now I drink my beer. I don't drink any hard stuff. But we go to my daughter's house for a barbecue. If I have 2 beers, 3 beers, they don't have to take the keys from me. I give them to them,
mm-hmm.
give them to my wife. And since then, if I drink beer, I'm at home or at one of my daughter's houses, and they know that I'm going to let them drive home.
And the important thing to say here, Charlie, is there's nothing wrong with drinking beer.
No,
the point is, once you have that beer, you know, Charlie's a good role model there. Give those keys to somebody else or stay at your daughter's house or whatever you need to do. Ted, you're on KMOX. Hi.
Yeah, what I think would solve a lot of this problem is simply take away the protections for the places that sell liquor, especially by the drink. Make them liable just like any other business, and you'll see a lot of this problem go away.
Well, MAD does support dram shop legislation, and that is appropriate. But we do believe the primary responsibility is on the individual. And people, many people, according from the first caller, would be surprised. Most people at MAD drink. It's just that we don't drink and drive. I mean, we have no problem with folks drinking, provided it is not to excess and certainly not behind the wheel.
All right, Chad, I'm glad you called. Chuck, I will have to tell you, this is where I differ with MAD. I think dram shop laws are a horrible idea. It just gets to my libertarian side that you're taking away that personal responsibility part and putting the blame on the owner of the restaurant or the bar. And I think it's an incredible burden to say to somebody in a busy club on a Saturday night where people are coming to and from the bar that the bartender has to know not only who's ordering every drink, but who's drinking every drink and how much they're consuming, and making sure that when they leave there that somebody has checked them to make sure that their eyes aren't all glassy and that they're going to be okay when they get in their car. I'm not a bar owner, but I think that's an impossible standard to hold them to.
I was a bartender, as I indicated. I worked my way through school bartending. It's a tough standard. Obviously, it occurred right here in St. Louis at the ballpark,
mm-hmm.
Where your pitcher was very drunk and ended up killing himself.
Yes.
I think it needs to be applied carefully where a person knowingly overserves somebody. I absolutely believe there's liability. There are inherent risks in alcohol. But it should not remove the personal responsibility. On that, we agree.
I did have to mention one other thing that made me laugh this week. MoDOT is spending money on talking urinals. Have you heard about this?
I have heard about it.
They have a woman's voice on them saying, "You've been drinking." And it's, you know, aimed at men because 80% of drinkers in Missouri or drunk drivers in Missouri are men. "You've been drinking, I can tell. Don't drive. Hey, big guy, going out tonight, having a few drinks? Don't drink and drive, because the next urinal you use could be in jail."
We try to maintain support only for those things proven in the science to work. I'd like to see the data on that before we support.
I'll tell you the data right now. Just like the guys having the contest for the breathalyzer, they're all going to be, "Hey, come in the bathroom, you got to hear this chick." That's what it's going to be. All right. You have your national conference here today, and you say in the next 10 years you want to eliminate drunk driving. The number one way to do that is to get breathalyzers, interlock ignition systems in cars.
Absolutely. We believe the combination of enforcement and technology can do that. We also believe there are three things we're not going to do. We're not going to get ahead of the data, we're not going to get ahead of the public, and not get ahead of the technology. If we don't do those three things and do the four things we discussed, we can eliminate one of the primary threats to the American family.
Well, as a person who drives to work and drives around, I mean, 80% of the people who are listening to this show every afternoon are in their cars, taking their kids somewhere, getting home from work, doing whatever it is, running errands, etc. I depend on people being able to stay safe in their cars for my listenership. And for those people who have stopped off at happy hour and had a couple on the way home, I hope that we've maybe put an idea in their head that that's not such a great idea. Or if they're going to do that, have somebody like me in the car who could be their designated driver, because you're not putting booze in your gullet. Thank you for your time today, Chuck.
Thank you for your leadership on this, Paul.
Chuck Hurley, CEO of MAD. They're having their national conference right down the street from us at the Renaissance Hotel here in St. Louis.